The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, let's get going on Friday evening. Glad to have you along. We're going to go down to Florida and talk to Hurricane Irma. What did you do with Hurricane Irma?
Irma was not a lady. She was not very nice.
No, not at all. Now, well, that's the point. Here's an interesting story. Florida. Farmers now say that Irma's damage is the worst they've ever seen. You probably know that there. We don't hear that up here. I had to look this up. Almost one half of Florida's citrus crops were destroyed by Irma. And when Florida farmers survey the damage, and most are saying without question, it is the worst destruction their farms have ever seen. That's bad.
Could be. It depends on what area.
Right.
Some areas were hit incredibly hard. There was tremendous damage. Other areas... like us, thank God. Nobody killed in this area. Injuries in this area were next to nothing. Damage in this area was also next to nothing. Except nobody, well, I can't say nobody anymore, but almost everybody in this county lost electrical power.
Right.
I hadn't had a shower since last Saturday. And I smell like a goat, and no electric power means no air conditioning.
Right.
And we live out in the woods, and most Floridians are on a well and septic.
Uh-huh.
And if you have no electric, you can't flush your toilets, and you can't keep your food cold. My wife dragged out a whole huge bag of food that went bad. So it's annoying and it's expensive in our area, but thank God it could have been a whole lot worse. We could hear crap hitting the roof, banging and clanging, and the wind was just screaming and howling.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, it's not boring. All right, let's give it that much.
That's right, it wasn't boring.
When the worst of Hurricane Irma's fury had passed, Gene McAvoy hit the road to inspect the citrus groves and vegetable fields in Florida. McAvoy is a specialist on vegetable farming at the University of Florida's Extension Office in the town of La Belle. La Belle is located in the middle of one of the country's biggest concentrations of vegetable and citrus farms.
Yeah, it's right on the shore of Lake Okeechobee. It's a very cutesy little...
Well, La Belle
little town.
Means pretty. According to NPR, the storm made a direct hit to those fields. The eye wall, might as well say the eyeball, wall came right over our main production area, McAvoy said. So it's not good. Maybe We have half the crops destroyed. Many of the destroyed groves of oranges and grapefruit were actually approaching harvest. But after Irma blew through, it left 50 to 60% of the fruit lying in water or on the ground, said McAvoy. Many trees were standing in water, a mortal danger if these trees' roots stay submerged for longer than 3 or 4 days. About a quarter of the country's sugar production comes from fields of sugar cane near Lake Okeechobee, just east of La Belle. Harvest season for the sugarcane crop is only a few weeks away, and unfortunately, Irma knocked much of the cane down, making it more difficult to harvest. We won't know the exact extent of the loss until it's harvested, said McAvoy. Fortunately for the vegetable farms, most had yet to be planted, so the destruction was minimal. But that won't help the destroyed citrus produce. Okay, I wonder, they may try to pick a lot of these things up off the ground, and they have to pick them kind of greenish anyway, so we'll see. Anyway, bad news there. And what's even worse is the impact on the poor. There are a lot of poor people living in trailers and little reclusive mobile homes and things, I'm told, in your area, your general area. Lake County? Lake something?
Lake something? Lake County is near us. We're in Citrus County.
Right.
But Lake County is near us.
Well, these people, when they lose their power, they really lose... That's it. They have nothing. And because they're living on a margin.
Dark and you're sweltering.
Right, right. So.
Try it. It's 85 degrees at night with 100% humidity. You stick to the sheets. You stick to the pillow. You can't get comfortable.
What the hell do you want to live there for?
I love Florida. This is only the second time in 30 years in Florida that we've had a problem like this. And other than that, we don't have 20 below zero weather. I don't have any snow shovels anymore. I don't have any heavy clothing or heavy coats. Florida is just a magnificent place. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else.
So the humidity, you just put up with the humidity and ignore it pretty much.
Well, it depends. When we first moved here, our summers were hot but not humid for quite a few years. Now they're getting hotter and hotter, but they're more humid, stickier. So, Well, that's why God invented air conditioning.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
Actually, it was a guy named James Gorey who lived in the town of Apalachicola right by the Big Bend. He invented air conditioning and made it a year-round livable state. Otherwise, it was snowbird country. You know, live up north in the summer, come down Florida in the winter.
Right. Okay, so when the storm approached you and it started huffing and puffing, what was it? What's it like? Did power go out early or later?
Power went out early, before the storm hit. And some friends of ours had a more substantial house on higher ground. It was their daughter and her husband, who's a Marine Corps hopefully a major. We'll know that at the end of this month. He's a captain right now. He's out of the country on deployment. And the daughter, the Marine Corps officer's wife, she took her kids and went to another state and told us we could have her house. So that was nice. I brought my wife and son over there, but I came back home. And me and my two buddies, Smith and Wesson, made sure that nobody came around in the middle of the night. We live in a very quiet area, though, so
right.
We had no problem.
Right.
But it just...
How high did the wind get miles per hour? Were you 80, 70, 80?
Well, I think it was over 100 miles an hour in our area. And it's something everybody should experience once in their life, hearing this stuff screaming overhead. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like raining bricks on the roof, you know, because all sorts of little pieces of sticks are breaking off the brittle branches, and it's just flying through the air and banging on the roof. But I got to tell you, as soon as it was over, less than an hour after dawn, the day after it was over, you could hear the chainsaws out there because trees had fallen across our roads.
Sure.
And it was the people themselves to chainsaws, cutting to where you could drive through the area. Otherwise, you know, if you're waiting for the government, who knows when it'll be. So people are out there with the chainsaws and passing out coffee. And it just really great. And our governor, I think, handled it beautifully.
Uh-huh.
Traffic was blocked on Interstate 75 and 95, which are the main north-south routes in Florida. 95 is on the east coast. 75 is close to the west coast. Nothing was moving. All the gas stations were out of gas, and the tanker trucks were stuck in the line. He ordered the state police to convoy these guys, and I watched some of them go by. The Florida Highway Patrol FHP cars would be zipping along there with the lights going like mad, and two, three, four, five tanker trucks behind them.
Hmm.
It was like a military op.
Uh-huh.
And they got the stations up and running again. But, oh, man, it was like the 1973 Arab oil embargo, which was bogus. I can speak from experience there. But just lines. We saw one line out of this one gas station that went down the highway, went up into a parking lot for a car wash, you know, the kind you put in a bunch of quarters and spray your own car.
Right.
In and around through the various bays of the car wash and then back out and down the highway for a mile.
Wow.
It was just a madhouse. You couldn't, it was tough getting gas. Ice, everybody blew out of ice real fast.
Sure.
It was just really.
Oh, these aren't. See, these storms. People. A lot of people who go through storms, they think of cold, howling wind. These are warm. That's the big difference. Big difference.
It was warm. It never got cold. But there was stuff flying through the air, and like I say, though, in our county, Citrus County, damage was so minimal. We've driven around quite a bit, and we only saw one place where a tree fell on a house. Other than that,
it's a good ending to a story that was cranked up by the mainstream media to be the worst storm ever to hit Florida. Florida's been hit by about 500 hurricanes since 1850, direct hits. And this
every bit of that.
Yeah, yeah.
We had to cancel the one and only time we had to cancel a shark hunter's trip overseas was 2010, I think it was. I don't remember. But we got hit with three hurricanes, one after another, in 8 days. They were not as violent as this one.
Uh-huh.
But blinding rainstorm for like 10 days. They had closed the airport. And so we couldn't get out, so we had to cancel the tour. That was South Germany. But everybody who had paid for it went the next year on our tour for free because they had paid for it. And so we got out of that in okay. But we had a lot of damage there. And one beautiful, beautiful restaurant, it was an old cracker house, they called it, a large one. The place was called KC Crump's. Unfortunately, when the storm was all over and the power company put the power back on, something happened with some of their electrical equipment over there. They couldn't take the load. It caught fire and burned to the ground. So we had to go find another place to eat.
Well, at least you didn't have any looters visiting the Cooper residence, so that's good.
No, that was nice. They did have one instance reported in our county where some snowbirds were still up north, and somebody broke through the patio door and went in and was stealing stuff. In other, you know, the bigger cities, they might have had more. I don't know. It's hard getting news here with no electricity. But in our county, that was all we saw. But our county is the oldest in Florida. It's the average age, I think, is like 70 years old. So how many 85-year-old crackheads are running around busting in houses to get money for their drugs? Yeah, none of them. They don't exist. So it was pretty quiet. Everybody was helping everybody.
Oh, very good.
I'm helping with a new newspaper here in our county, a right-wing newspaper, and because I'm very experienced in this, and also they need to set up a phone room, and I used to be vice president of a telemarketing company, so I'm helping them. I called the publisher yesterday to ask if we were having a staff meeting on Monday. Yeah, we are. And I told him that we had no power, and we hadn't had shower since last Saturday. He says, hey, throw your family in the car. Come on over here. He says, we got power. Take showers here. Everybody steps forward to help everybody, and it's beautiful the way America works.
Well, we see our
president sending all those ships down there to help out.
Mm-hmm. We always see the best of America in the worst of times. Unfortunately, what happens after the goodness shows, and often quite abundantly, the badness is right behind it. The looters, the hustlers, the sharks, the con artists. Man, if you're a victim of a natural disaster, you've got to be doubly careful.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
really bad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Crooks come out of the woodwork like
yeah,
the snakes
yeah.
they are.
We had another person lined up who lives not far from you, who was right there in the midst of it, and is a poor person, and I don't think she was available. KT, are you there by any chance?
Yes, I am. I'm not where he is. He's in Citrus County. I'm in Lake County.
Glad we got you. Okay. Now, KT Frankovich is... hold on, KT. Let me introduce you. She is a longtime friend and very fascinating individual. She's had an extraordinary life. And she happens to be a poor person now, a poor person. She's not wealthy. She has a very thin margin of existence, like less than $1,000 a month, like so many of you who are not Muslims or black Africans who don't get $4,000 or $5,000 a month, free everything. So KT, who has contributed a lot to our culture, has to live the life of a pauper. And I asked her if she'd come on tonight and tell us what it was like for her. KT, say hello to Harry Cooper.
Hello, Harry.
Hi, KT. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
All right.
We had a different experience of Irma than you did. My electricity went out about 1:30, and just before it went out...
that AM or PM, KT?
It was 1:30 in the morning.
All right.
And just before it went out, they were reporting that 4.3 million people throughout Florida were without power. This thing.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, this thing covered the entire state. Millions of people were without power. It was very terrifying where I was. The eye wall came right over me. Now, the thing about Irma that was real interesting, Jeff, is the way this thing worked is you get these feeder bands, okay? And they keep going around and around, circulating around the eye.
Right.
Well, Irma didn't move very quickly. Irma moved very slowly, which means that you got the same feeder band coming around and around and around and around and getting you.
Like an unwanted house guest. I got it.
Yes. And these storms... These are like individual horrific thunderstorms off the scale, all right? They got
each one, okay.
And stronger as they came around. The worst winds are just north of the eye, and that's where I was. And boy, it was terrifying. I had to dig my way out of my back door. Dig to get out in the morning.
Debris from plants and trees and shrubs
trees,
and junk?
Trees. Entire trees.
Uh-huh.
Now, you were talking about the citrus industry, and I want to make an interesting comment here. Because I also lived through Hurricane Andrew at Ground Zero, right where it came in off the bay. Now, and Andrew was a Category 5. So there was nothing. There was no grass. There was no trees. There was nothing. I mean, just this gnarled mess. You didn't even know where you were.
Uh-huh.
Okay. in Irma, the structures were still standing. But if you look at the overall thing that it hit, talking about the citrus industry, was trees. Massive trees down all over the place. This is why people are without power, because the trees took the power lines with them. Just
sure.
Trees. Okay. Isn't that interesting? Trees are what we need to live.
Were you
give off oxygen?
Yeah. Yeah. Now this KT was severely injured in Andrew, by the way, and was witness to the actual number of people to a circumstantial degree who died. It was a lot more than the government admitted, and we don't want to go into that story. Yeah.
It was over 10,000 people died. We'll never know the true figures on what it was, because they roped us off and wouldn't let any of the survivors, which were very few, out, and wouldn't let anyone in. And the reason they did that was that Turkey Point Nuclear Plant, which is owned by Florida Power and Light,
uh-huh.
is located on a little island in Biscayne Bay. Little tiny island that's got this big nuclear plant on it, built back in the 60s.
Very smart.
Very old thing, mm-hmm. okay? And when Andrew came in, Andrew came straight across, never deviated, although the news media was telling us that it was going to come in at Palm Beach. So a lot of people evacuated to where I was, down by Biscayne Bay, you see,
mm-hmm.
and left their homes. Well, Andrew never strayed course. The news media lied about it coming in. We took where I was located. It was a direct hit, maybe 3 miles away from Biscayne Bay. And I mean direct. The first wall of winds hit us at over 210 miles per hour. And the reason we know that is the wind measuring machines at the Coast Guard station broke. And that Coast Guard station was located right behind me.
Hmm. All right. Let me fast forward to Irma. We don't have a whole lot of time, KT, but this storm, as I said...
Well, I wanted to make a comment about Turkey Point, okay?
Right. Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. I'm just talking to you from experience. We all had radiation poisoning, those of us who survived, and that's what they didn't want the world to know. Within 24 hours, we broke out in huge sores that both they oozed and were deep red and itched and burned. We had horrible
radiation contact poisoning. Wow.
Oh yeah. We couldn't stand up. You had to lie in the fetal position. You had the uncontrollable dry heaves and diarrhea. This went on for months. Okay. They didn't want the world to know that South Florida had all this radiation. See, what happened was the reactors were compromised. Now, the comment I wanted to make about Irma is, I heard on the television, when my electricity came back on, I heard one reporter say that in South Florida, it was looking like it could be months before electricity was restored. Well, that electricity is produced by Turkey Point nuclear reactor. Okay, now Irma, when Irma came in, Irma's eye did not go over Turkey Point nuclear reactor plant. But remember what I told you about Irma.
Right.
The winds, the circulating winds, in these wind bands keep going around and around, and the storms get stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And the winds were, they were saying, they were gusting all the way up to 185 miles per hour. You can figure it's probably more. So that's enough to do a lot of damage to a nuclear power plant.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they had also said on the news media that before Irma hit, they had said that Turkey Point was considering, now this was maybe a day or two before Irma struck us, that they were considering shutting down Turkey Point nuclear reactor.
Kind of common sense.
Mm-hmm. I laughed myself right off the couch, because it takes days to shut down a nuclear reactor plant. You can't just flick a switch.
Nope.
It doesn't work. And yet, in Andrew, when I exposed the truth about Hurricane Andrew and all the deaths and what happened at Turkey Point nuclear reactor plant to Europeans in the Mideast, when I got back from traveling, the CEO of Florida Power and Light called me. Now, this is regarding Turkey Point nuclear reactor. And very condescending, and said, "Oh, Miss Frankovich, you know, you are misinformed, and you don't know what you're talking about."
Wow, Mr. Big called you to say that.
Yes, and he told me, these are his exact words. He said, "When Hurricane Andrew came across Biscayne Bay, we flicked the switch and turned off the entire nuclear power plant." And I said, "Really?
Uh-huh.
You mean like you flick the switch and the kitchen light goes off?" "Yes, Ms. Frankovich." Well, you don't want to know what I called him.
Good job. Good for you.
And he hung up on me. Uh-huh. Now, all the doctors in the state of Florida knew that we had radiation poisoning, because when I had to go to the Mayo Clinic in the year 2000, I talked to those doctors and told them they knew. They already knew that if I came out of South Florida and Hurricane Andrew, I had extreme radiation poisoning.
So when you were on the program back then, not long afterward, when you came back home, describing all this, was the radiation poisoning still bothering you then, or were you pretty well over it?
Oh, no. The sores and the abdominal problems, the dysentery, that went on for a full year.
Yeah, because you told me you still weren't feeling well, and I didn't push it. But
that went on for a full year. And here's the other interesting thing. There was a study done about 7 years after Andrew, around 1999, 90, right in there, that year. And what it was done is the children who were born after Hurricane Andrew, who lived right in the ground zero area where there were 21 communities that disappeared off the face of the earth, right? Okay, the children that were born after Andrew, they asked them at school, and these are, you know, six-year-olds, to bring in their baby teeth when they fell out. They called it the Tooth Fairy Project.
There's a giveaway. Yep.
Tooth Fairy Project, it was done at a university here in Florida, in Central Florida.
Uh-huh.
Well, they examined those little teeth, and my, what a surprise. There were seven times mm-hmm. higher mm-hmm. the safe amount of radiation in those little teeth.
Right. They've done this before in other areas of the country for other reasons. Same general search, they're looking for radioactive exposure, and for some reason, children's teeth are the perfect repository to test and to evaluate.
You're right. Now, remember, we not only have Turkey Point Nuclear Power Plant, that's an old one. We got one at Crystal River, okay? That's another old one that's been, I mean, that thing's a mess, too. And Irma covered the entire state of Florida.
Uh-huh.
People, wake up.
Let me interrupt for a second here. Yeah, we live only a short way from Crystal River nuclear plant, but they shut down the nuclear part of it years ago. It's now gas-fired, so the nuclear stuff. And for some reason, we're still paying a little upcharge for the nuclear facility, but there is no more nuclear power over there.
Well, you don't hear that story very often, Harry. That's good news.
Wait a minute. You're paying for nuclear, some kind of nuclear facility, and it's not supposed to be there anymore?
It's gas-fired now. They switched it.
Yeah, it's gas-fired. And basically, we were paying for the repairs because it got cracks in the reactors, which is why they shut it down some years ago, but we're still paying for them to repair the cracks or something. They've got upcharges out the wazoo for,
Okay,
you know, to look at the engineer.
When they got those cracks in the reactors, Did they tell you that, hey, there's radiation leaking out?
They did tell us that, and they told us that's why they were adding another upcharge.
Did a good friend of mine tell you that the radiation was reaching you?
No, they didn't say I was going to. I would know, believe me, because that was my career field in the Air Force. I was in command of a six-man team loading hydrogen bombs onto bombers. So if we had leaks, I'd have known. A good friend of mine, Nancy Argenziano, was on the board, the regulatory board. They have a bunch of guys deciding whether or not utilities should get rate increases. And she was a tough cookie. She made them justify every increase in rates that they asked for. And she was a tough cookie, but unfortunately they didn't like her. So
she didn't last long.
They had some butt kissers in the Florida legislature pass a law that you must have a college degree to be on that regulatory board. She was the only one on the board that didn't have a college degree. Yeah. What a quinky dink.
Yeah. All right, so, KT, let me get a... We've got to do a program here with Harry on his tour to South America, his historical tour and research. But I want to get one more comment from you on Irma. Go ahead.
In regards to what?
Whatever you want to mention. What do you think the most important thing is?
Here's the other thing. You are getting the news reports out on the West Coast and so forth. The thing is that water was very scarce. Food, you couldn't get food. Even the grocery stores ran out. You couldn't get to the grocery stores because of all the debris and the wires and everything down in the road.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, so then you think, well, you know, why didn't these people stock up? Well, because in Lake County where I live, we don't have a lot of money to live on. So we didn't have the money to run out and get food and get all this water and
you actually couldn't afford to prepare for a hurricane.
That's right. And then you had no car. And then our cell phones went down. Mm-hmm. And our regular phones. We couldn't get a hold of anyone. I have a little dog. I love him to pieces. He broke his hip during the storm. And I still can't get the veterinarian to come help him. I can't. And I can't get to the vet. This is how horrendous it is for us.
Well,
it's a very different story. Depending on where you are and who you hear it from.
And your income level, and when you're on the bottom from certainly due to nothing that you've done, that's just circumstance.
Right. I have electricity. I got it yesterday. You want to open up my refrigerator door? You know what you'll see? You'll see a half a gallon of milk and one bottle of soda. That's my food. And FEMA is not reimbursing anyone for lost food, and there is no help for us.
Same old story, KT.
Same old story.
I'm sorry. Thanks very much for sharing that. I'm glad you weren't hurt this time around, and I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me on, and I enjoyed being on with your other guests, and this is a good thing for the audience to see the contrast in how the hurricane hits.
Very good. All right. My friend, take care.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, KT. Yeah,
KT,
she's right. She's right that it was really horrible in some areas, and like us in Citrus County, it was not so bad, thank God. But we're not living any better than KT. I'm retired, and we're living on our Social Security. And the sleaze bags at Social Security now want to cut my son's Social Security, his special needs, from birth.
Come on.
I'm not kidding.
They'll loot Social Security for as long as they can get away with it, which is probably going to be a long time, and there'll be nothing much left for people in another generation.
Yeah, so, he gets $69 a month. With his SSI, and as long as he gets at least $1 a month, he keeps his Medicaid. So this jamoke from Social Security "Oh, he's got a job, doesn't he?" I said, "Well, he volunteers at the hospital on Monday, and then the rest of the week he works at a special needs place and a clothing store, thrift store. He sorts clothes." "Oh, well, wow. He made $250 last month." I said, "Yeah, $250 in a whole month. Well, we're going to have to cut, you know." And so he got him down to $1.50 for his SSI. But as long as he keeps at least $1 SSI, he gets his Medicaid.
I see.
So I hear this clown clicking away on the keys. I says, "You're not going to cut all of his SSI out to where he doesn't get Medicaid, are you?" "Oh," he says, "I'm going to try not to." Okay, bang, zoom. I called my congressman, because I'm with the Republican Executive Committee, and we helped get that congressman elected. So I
right.
called the office. And I say, "Hey, shut this fool off." So we'll find out, because I'm leaving for Germany in 6 days. I'm leaving, it's our Southern Patrol where
right.
we go over and visit
right.
places.
Right. All right. Well, that's so, that's another sickening story. KT on the bottom of the bottom end of the financial rung
Total
on the
ball.
Ladder. She's right
yeah.
down there, and they really suffer. Go ahead.
One thing, she mentioned she's in the area where Florida Power and Light services. Throughout Florida, they're known as Florida Flash and Flicker.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Florida Flash and Flicker.
Cute. Okay.
And we got Duke Energy here, and boy, oh boy, keep your hand on your wallet with Duke around.
No nuclear power plant has ever made a profit or ever resulted in lower rates for the customers that I know of.
Oh.
Never. None
well,
of them
we haven't
have been
seen rates go down. In the 27 years we've lived
no.
in this community, we've never
that's,
seen the rates go down. They just keep going up and up and up.
That's exactly my point. Okay,
yeah.
For all of you who are waiting, let's go take a look now at Harry Cooper in Guests and look under his name. More revelations of Harry's recent research trip to Paraguay and Argentina. We want you to click on the lowest link. It says Shark Hunters International, July 2017, Harry's South American research trip. So click on that. It's a third little paragraph, so to speak, third sentence. Click on that, and let's open the page. You'll find a rents page. And on that page will be the photos from the first link on the actual tours page on sharkhunters.com. We're going to go through these pictures, and then we'll click at the bottom to go to the main index page, and we'll pick the next location where Harry would like to take us. All right, Maestro. Plaza Libertador. Libertador? Libertador?
Libertador.
That was my next guess, honest. San Martin, okay.
General San Martin, yeah. San Martin, as we know from history, he's the guy that liberated all of South America from the Spanish control. And there's a huge park in Buenos Aires, and this is one of the entrances, Plaza Libertador, General San Martin, and this sign is right across the street from the Plaza Hotel, which is where Martin Bormann lived for a couple of years after the war was over. He had a couple of young women living with him, so I think he gets extra points for that. But this is just a magnificent park. People come there on their lunch hour, and they lay uh-huh. around on the grass, and the beautiful. Buenos Aires is called the Paris of the South. It's a beautiful city.
Well, what we're looking at here is, tell me what I'm looking at. I'm looking at a large, white, modern office-type building on the right. On the left
well,
is
the office.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the office building just happened to be in the frame. But the next picture with all the plaques on the back and the one just below that on the other side, that is their monument to the Malvinas War. Which,
so those are all the dead of the Malvinas War with Britain?
That's correct.
Okay. It's
that's
kind of like our Vietnam Veterans Memorial.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And in Argentina, it's called the Malvinas War. In England and the rest of the Northern Hemisphere, it's called the Falkland Islands War.
Right.
And what most people don't No, because nobody's bothered to put it out there. This is not merely a squabble over a couple of little islands that for centuries belonged to England. Just a bunch of sheep herders down there, I guess.
Right.
Or it's in the Argentine waters. The first battle, the first war for the Falkland Islands was 1915, when the German cruiser squadron under Admiral Graf von Spee tangled with the British cruiser squadron. I can't remember the British admiral's name, but the German cruiser squadron was all wiped out except for the cruiser Dresden, because they were one knot faster than the British cruisers. But the war was for control of a choke point. Any vessels coming around Cape Horn had to go through a passageway between the Falklands and the coast of Argentina.
Uh-huh.
I forget how wide it is. It's not like 5 miles wide. It's fairly wide, but it's a choke point.
Right.
It brings the traffic into a narrower, more confined, controlled space. There's also an incredible amount of oil underneath
That's the big story. There's tons of petroleum resources all around the Falklands.
Right. And so that was what the squabble was about. So, you know, these are the guys who died. And no matter what the war is, everybody loses the war. These people were killed. Their families were devastated. And last year when I was in Buenos Aires, huge, big protests. Now, any of the Argentine military men who fought in the war got a very nice pension. But there were a lot of Argentine military personnel yanked out of various areas, Buenos Aires primarily, and shipped down to the south of Argentina to the port of General Belgrano,
uh-huh.
which is their main Navy base, in support roles. You know, medics, moving material around, et cetera.
Sure, sure.
And they didn't get the pension, and they're upset. They want a pension, just like the guys who saw combat. And I don't know how it was finally resolved, but they were not a happy bunch. And they were in the Plaza de Mayo, which is in front of the their government building, the Plaza uh-huh. Rosada. The Casa Rosada, the pink house.
So we should remind people that this trip that Harry took was a solo trip. It wasn't a tour. It went down there on a research mission. And as you know, if you heard our two programs we did last month, extraordinary things were discovered that Harry had already a line on in the past. I knew about a little bit of it. And boy, he came back with some real treasure. There's a book that we mentioned last time by his two doctor friends. It's actually not originally by them. It was written by Holdeen Goebbels, one of the daughters of Joseph Goebbels. Of course, she was supposedly poisoned and killed by her parents. But as with so many stories of the end of the Third Reich, it wasn't true. She had an entire scrapbook, a huge book, full of hand-drawn illustrations naming people's names that she saw, interacted with, and that her mother saw, Magda. And one of the key names of people that she saw down there in Paraguay after the war was Adolf Hitler. So if you missed those programs, go back and listen to them. This book is available on Amazon. There is an English translation of it. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about that, because that book was, what a find. What an amazing find.
Right. And these two doctors, they live together. They're in love. The guy is an eye surgeon, and the lady is a gynecologist. And that's how they first got into this. Holdeen was using the name of Nora Daisy, and she was living in squalor. And Dr. Christian was either treating indigent people or was working at a clinic with indigent people. I don't know the exact specifications, but that's how she met Nora Daisy. And she was living in just a clapboard shack kind of thing with a bunch of dogs and cats. And so she eventually, you know, they got to be friends, and Nora Daisy, a.k.a. Holdeen Goebbels, told her who she was and then showed this scrapbook. I held the scrapbook in my hand. The sucker weighs about, you know, 10 pounds, 15 pounds. It's a good 6 inches thick. And on my website, sharkhunters.com, you go to previous tours, and the very top one, of course, is the one I just came back from, and we'll look into that later in this program, because these pictures will lead us to this. And everybody knows that the 6 children were poisoned, and so was Magda, but yet you look at the picture, and those children were very skinny, malnourished, and had deep, malformed legs and arms, some of them. That's not the way the children of a powerful guy like Joseph Goebbels would be.
No.
So we believe these were kids that had died in the camps and were dressed up to look nice.
That suggests that Holdeen was not the only one who went off and lived a life elsewhere.
Elsewhere. Yeah, we don't know about the other ones, but we do know about Holdeen and her mother, Magda. And it is fairly well established, but not proven DNA-wise or whatever, but it's pretty well established that her father was actually Hitler, because Magda Goebbels was madly in love with Hitler. Joseph Goebbels wrote in his diary that he was terrified that his wife was having sex with Hitler. And so when they got down to Argentina, now this is the nice thing about the way our research is conducted. There are so many researchers in the world. Some of them are great. Some of them are really worthless. And there's all sorts of in between.
Yeah.
These guys research pretty much on their own. Shark Hunters, as you know, is a huge group of people. We've got a gigantic network that spans 77 nations. Excuse me. And so one of our members, who some of our real deep research people, we give them code names, and this one is Pocahontas.
Right.
Pocahontas told me about these two doctors and couldn't find them in their little South American town.
Uh-huh.
So one of our members was Eric Gimpel, who was a German Abwehr agent who was put ashore in Maine to sabotage the American Atomic Energy Commission, or, you know, the bomb, Manhattan
the program,
Project.
The Manhattan, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. He got caught. He was going to be executed. The war ended. They sent him to federal prison for a few years, and he moved down to Brazil. He was a good friend. He passed away a few years ago, but his daughter maintained his membership. So I asked her to find these people. She found the people, and then we communicated that way. So the network is what brings everybody together. And the neatest thing about this particular story is that we have this story with all the details from two totally separate and unrelated people.
That's the ultimate corroboration. You bet. That's great.
Oh, it's incredible. These two doctors, they told their whole story in the book. And this other member of Shark Hunters that we were introduced to by Pocahontas, he uses the name Michael. He was born 1940 in Berlin. His father was some big shot, I think, in the army. His mother was best friends with Magda Goebbels and also best friends with Eva Braun. And when Hitler's dog Blondie had pups, that gave one to Michael's mother. Magda and Ava were not the best of buddies, of course. But when the war ended, his father disappeared. His mother took him to live on their coffee plantation in Bolivia. And his mother renewed the friendship with Magda Goebbels down there.
Fascinating.
And he has pictures of his mother and Magda Goebbels down there. His mother and Magda Goebbels were trying to get Michael and Holdeen romantically inclined after they got into their late teens, but he didn't want any part of it because she was, I've seen pictures of her, and I can understand why he wasn't interested.
Well, she looked more like her dad than a beauty queen, let's put it that way.
She reminded me a lot of Dick Butkus.
That too. When we come back from the top of the hour break here, let's tell people how to get hold of the translated copy of this magnificent
sure
book.
Will.
Fascinating
it's
book.
It's a great book.
Oh, yeah. And we'll do that and much more. Another hour to go with Harry. Stand by. We'll be right back. Don't go away.